Hi, I'm Kimberly Rogers, and you're listening to the Torah portion, Shalach Lecha, for June 17th and 18th from sundown to sundown. This message is brought to you by themessianicmessage.com. I hope that you enjoy this teaching. Shalach Lecha. It is Numbers chapter 13, verse 1 to chapter 15, verse 41. The Haftarah is Joshua 2, verses 1 to 24, and the Brit HaDashah is Hebrews chapter 3, starting in verse 7 to chapter 4, verse 1. Shalach Lecha is a fascinating Torah portion that, in the beginning of it, has much to teach us about how to transition from one state of mind to another, from a slave mentality to a free man's mentality, from the place where we are now in history on the earth to the place where we want to be. And of course, part of that is going through the tribulation. Let's go to Numbers 13 and start in verse 1. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Send men to spy out the land of Canaan, which I am giving to the people of Israel. From each tribe of their fathers you shall send a man, every one a chief among them." The beginning of Shalach Lecha raises questions in many people's minds about why the spies were sent in the first place. Was God testing Israel? Remember that the people had just suffered losses several times because of complaining and disobedience, that God had followed up with spankings. You know, the kind of spankings that make people die. So, was God testing them? Well, probably, but it was more likely that the test was one of whether or not they were ready and willing to follow instructions, and whether they would be able to overcome their slave mindset in the end after having failed 9 previous tests, rather than him, you know, God testing them because of what had happened in the previous Torah portions. The reason I say this, that this was not a test because of the previous Torah portions, but was a test to find out if they would finally overcome their slave mindset, was because, you know, God had previously judged them in the other Torah portions, and during the times of those judgments, some people died. So when God completes a judgment, and when he forgives a sin, he does not continue to hold a grudge. He doesn't go back to revisit it. If God holds grudges, then we're all in a heap of trouble. No, in this Torah portion, God simply wants to move on. There is one more opportunity for the children of Israel to get it right before moving into the promised land. So we need to stop projecting onto God our human tendency to hold a grudge and always be mistrustful of those that we've had to forgive. This test was just the next test in the wilderness. It wasn't a continuation test because of any previous misbehavior. You know, we see the pattern throughout all of these Torah portions that, again, when God judges us, that closes the subject. However, God lets us have these things for us to study. It's for our edification, not as a reminder for him to, you know, continue being mad at the children of Israel. No, what he's trying to do here is just teach us to learn from the mistakes of our ancestors so that we won't make that mistake. So, this first part of Shalakhlaka is about the slave mentality. It is about how to transition from slavery to freedom. It tells us what not to do. You see, a slave's mind is one that has no imagination and is non-adaptive. Now, all imagination and creativity have been beaten out of the slave. All a slave can do is take orders. He cannot think outside his own frame of reference. He can't think outside the box, as we say these days. You know, the reason for this is because if he becomes a free thinker, so to speak, he risks his life. He becomes afraid for his life. And slaves simply cannot withstand change. It just messes them up. So what does it mean to not be a slave? Does it mean to be the exact opposite, which is someone who simply won't take orders, whose imagination runs wild, and who follows every whim of his imagination? What is the in-between thing there? You know, what is in between someone who has to take orders or die and someone who refuses to take orders even though those orders mean life? What is between these two extremes? Well, it's obedience. Obedience wins every time. But many people think that obedience to God equals slavery. Now, do you know why obedience does not equal slavery? Well, it's the difference between having a choice and not having one. Obedience is a choice. Slavery means you have no choice. The Hebrew Roots movement is one of learning how to transition from a slave's mentality to a free man's mentality. And, you know, we don't have it quite right yet, but we're working on it. Our first act of choice will be to obey God when it comes time to leave everything behind and go into the wilderness of the peoples, won't it? So we have to ask ourselves what we will do when God says it's time to go. Are we going to be like these shaliach, these men that were sent to reconnoiter the land of Canaan? Are we going to find excuses to stay behind, to not go? Or are we going to make the announcement to our family and friends that, you know, we're going to go and they can come with us or they can stay where they are? Well, it really does come down to this, doesn't it? And actually, that right there is going to be the first test for us, isn't it? So now is a good time to start preparing to answer this question. Those who answered correctly way back then, those two men, Joshua and Caleb, got to go to the land, didn't they? Those who didn't answer correctly did not get to go. The children of Israel had to wait another 40 years for those with the slave mentality to die, because God does not want slaves. He wants people who choose because they are free, and they are free because He has set them free, and they're able to recognize this. Now, you see, a lot of believers don't know they're free yet. They keep acting just like slaves who can't pick up a Bible to use it to correct their own lives because they think the stuff in the Bible will just enslave them in another way. Okay, moving on. Go to Numbers 13:3. So Moses sent them from the wilderness of Paran according to the command of the Lord, all of them men who were heads of the people of Israel. And these were their names, from the tribe of Reuben, Shammua, the son of Zakur, from the tribe of Simeon, Shaphat, the son of Hori, from the tribe of Judah, Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, from the tribe of Issachar, Igal, the son of Joseph, from the tribe of Ephraim, Hoshea, the son of Nun, from the tribe of Benjamin, Palti, the son of Raphu, from the tribe of Zebulun, Gadiel, the son of Sodi, from the tribe of Joseph, that is, from the tribe of Manasseh, Gadi, the son of Susi, from the tribe of Dan, Amiel, the son of Gamali, from the tribe of Asher, Setur, the son of Michael, from the tribe of Naphtali, Nabi, the son of Vophshi, from the tribe of Gad, Guel, the son of Machi. These were the names of the men whom Moses sent to spy out the land, and Moses called Hoshea, the son of Nun, Joshua. Now we're going to take a look at these names. We're going to break them down because there's some interesting teaching here in these names. Let's go one by one, and just stick with me. I know this is going to be a little boring at first, but just hang in here with me because you're going to see something. Number one, Reuben. The tribe of Reuben was represented by Shammua. His name means a hearkener. It's Strong's 8051. The tribe of Simeon was represented by Shaphat. Shaphat means a judge. It's Strong's 8202. The tribe of Judah was represented by Caleb. It means wholehearted, and it means a dog. Strong's 3612. Issachar was represented by Igal. It means avenger, and some say it means he will redeem. Strong's 3008. Ephraim was represented by Oshea, which means deliverer, and also this is Joshua's name. It's Strong's 1954. Benjamin was represented by Palti. It means delivered, and some say it means my escape. It's Strong's 6406. Zebulun was represented by Gadiel, which means fortune of God, or my fortune is God. It's Strong's 1427. Manasseh was represented by Gadi, which means fortunate. It's Strong's 1426. Dan was represented by Amiel, which means people of God. That's Strong's 5988. Asher was represented by Setur, which means hidden, Strong's 5639. Naphtali was represented by Nabi, which means secret or occult. It's Strong's 5147. And Gad was represented by Guel, which is majesty of God, Strong's 1345. By the way, I gave you all those Strong's numbers just so that you can go and look up the actual meaning according to Strong's. Now, those are the positive aspects of those names. Now, what about the negative aspects? What can we learn from the negative aspects of these names? Now, many people believe that the list I'm going to give you now is more appropriate. And looking back on it, of course, you know, this is what we would say. The interesting thing, though, is that in this next list is the prophecy that's found in these names. Literally, the names of the 10 spies who came back with the negative report speak a prophecy. And you'll be able to put that prophecy together as I show you what the negative aspects of their names mean. So, you know, like I said, of course we can see now, you know, what that's all about, but they couldn't see it at the time. Let's go back to Shamua. Negatively, it means rumor. Shafat. Negatively, it means condemnation. Egal. Negatively, it means recompense. Palti. Negatively, it means escape. Gadiel. Negatively, it means fortune is my mighty one. Gadi. Negatively means my fortune. Amiel has an opposite, which is lo ami, meaning not my people. Setur means hidden, Nabi means runaway, and Guel negatively means pride. Now, what is the difference between these two lists? Nothing more than attitude, plain and simple. One attitude says, I'm a slave, so all I can be is this negative stuff. The other says, I'm free, and I choose to serve God, and that will make me more than the sum total of all my parts. So, let's examine the negative attitude that we know these 10 men displayed. Rumor. Well, that's starting them, enjoying them, and spreading them. Condemnation. That's putting others down in order to make oneself superior. Recompense, getting even. Fortune is my mighty one. That's loving money and wealth over everything else. And my fortune, what's in it for me? And not my people? I'm my own boss. Escape. Refusing to take responsibility for one's actions. Hidden. Secretive. Run away. Refuse to display courage. Pride. I am God. So you see, when we take a look at these names and take their negative aspects, we can see what these people were doing. Their names were telling their characters. Now, the name Hoshea, which we know as Joshua, means deliverer. And Caleb is Kolev, and it means all heart. It also means dog. And we might think that that doesn't have anything to do with all heart, but you know, that's what dogs are. They're all heart. They will lie at their master's feet. They will protect their master. They will do whatever their master tells them if their master has trained them well. So Caleb is an interesting fella because he was a Kenizzite. He was not a natural-born follower of the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, but he was grafted in. You see, in Numbers 32:12 is where we find out that Caleb was actually the son of Jephunneh the Kenizzite. But the thing is, he chose the God of Jacob over the God of the Canaanites or the Kenizzites or the Edomites or any other god, and he grafted himself into the olive tree. Now, in the wilderness, remember, there's going to be lots of ites among us, ranging from the unknown ites to the well-known ites, like Edomites, for instance. Now, some of those ites are going to be like the rabble that we've been learning about in the last Torah portions in the last few weeks. But there will be some of those ites that are going to be true believers. And so it's going to become more and more important as we draw closer to the tribulation for us to be able to identify the tares among us and not just based on how we feel about them. You know, God doesn't care about our emotions toward people. He cares about our actions toward people. What we need to be able to do is identify people's characteristics according to the scriptures. So we need to be kind of working in that area to get that understanding. Now, Moses, when he sent these guys out, he had a list of things that the men needed to find out. And there were 6 things to find out and 1 thing to do. Now, this equals 7, of course. And 7 is, as you know, a very important number in Scripture. It is very often associated with prophecy, which is one of the reasons why this Torah portion is so much associated with prophecy. Starting in verse 17, "And Moses sent them to spy out the land of Canaan and said to them, 'Get you up this way southward and go up into the mountain and 1, see the land, what it is, and 2, the people that dwell there, whether they be strong or weak, few or many, and 3, what the land is that they dwell in, whether it's good or bad, and 4, what cities there be that they dwell in, whether in tents or in strongholds, and what the land is, whether it 5, be fat or lean, or 6, whether there be wood in there or not, and be of good courage, and 7, bring of the fruit of the land.'" Now, the time that this was going on was the time of the grapes. And the Bible says they went up and searched the land from the wilderness of Zin unto Rehob, as the men come to Hamath. So the men went, and what did they bring back? Grapes. They actually chose to obey Moses. Probably because it was, you know, the easiest thing they could get, you know. There was abundant grapes then. They brought back grapes that were so huge they had to be carried by 2 men at a time. So here they come with this magnificent example of what is in the land of Canaan. And what did they say the very first thing out of their mouth? What did they say when they returned? Verse 7. "And they told him and said, 'We came to the land where you sent us, and surely it flows with milk and honey. And this is the fruit of it.'" Oh, wow, I'm excited, and I'm ready to go. That is until verse 28. "Nevertheless, the people be strong that dwell in the land, and the cities are walled and very great. And moreover, we saw the children of Anak there. And Amalekites dwell in the land of the south, and the Hittites and the Jebusites and the Amorites dwell in the mountains, and the Canaanites dwell by the sea and by the coast of Jordan." It was right there that the choice to let the negative aspect of their names imbue the words that they spoke. Now, Caleb, he speaks up and he says, "Oh, don't worry about that. We can overcome that." But, oh no, the people start crying and whining in their tents and calling for leaders to come forth to take them back to Egypt. Literally, these people prefer to be in a backslidden state rather than to trust God to overcome the giants and the Anak that were in the land. They prefer to go back to Egypt. They prefer cowardice over courage. May we never make that choice. Numbers 14, starting in verse 5. "Then Moses and Aaron fell on their faces before all the assembly of the congregation of the children of Israel. And Joshua the son of Nun, and Caleb the son of Jephunneh, which were of them that searched the land, rent their clothes, And they spoke to all the company of the children of Israel, saying, The land which we pass through to search is an exceeding good land. If the Lord delight in us, then he will bring us into this land and give it to us, a land which flows with milk and honey. Only rebel not against the Lord, neither fear the people of the land, for they are bread for us. Their defense is departed from them, and the Lord is with us. Don't fear them. But all the congregation bade that they stone them with stones, and the glory of the Lord appeared in the tabernacle of the congregation before all the children of Israel. Uh-oh, the kids are fighting. And here comes Dad. God told Noah, remember back in Genesis, that he was not always going to strive with man. Well, look at the strife he's getting now. How many times does God have to bring the children of Israel within an inch of their lives before they will change their ways? You see, the reason we're going to have this problem in our camps is because the Christian church is exactly like these children of Israel. They're exactly this way. You know, God is trying to deliver them. But they fight him tooth and nail and refuse to be obedient. They refuse to stay out of Egypt. They want what Egypt has for them even after being delivered. You know, the church is going back to Egypt. It has since its inception, and it's still doing it today. The tribulation is thus required in order to bring about a change of heart in these people. You know, you can take the person out of the bar or whatever situation they're in and give them something else to believe in, but you cannot take the bar out of the person or change their mindset. You know, it's not about where the body is, whether it's on a bar stool or in a church pew. It's not about what my mind believes, because beliefs come and go. No, it's about the heart. The church today and the children of Israel of this generation that we're reading about have the same thing in common. No heart for God. They want to have their own way. They want to have it easy. They don't want to have to struggle to grow and mature spiritually. And they definitely don't want to have anything to do with that bunch of rules that need to be obeyed. Well, guess what? We, who are in the Hebrew Roots movement, also need to grow and get things straight in our lives according to Torah, so that when the time comes, we can prevent a repeat of the result of this Torah portion. And what is the result of it? Well, God just wanted to kill them all on the spot. Numbers 14:11. And the Lord said to Moses, How long will this people provoke me? And how long before they believe me for all the signs which I have showed among them? I will smite them with pestilence and disinherit them, and will make of you, he's talking to Moses, a greater nation and mightier than they. Wow, that's a good boy. I'll tell you what, that's something to really think about there. You know, I'm going to take you, Moses. I'm going to do something mightier and greater than these people, and it's all going to come from you. But, you know, Moses had a heart for God. You know, we think that he says he got on his face, but the truth is that Moses was more concerned about God, which is why he reasoned with God about how this is going to affect his holy name with all the peoples of the world. You know, Moses said to God, you know, you're going to lose credibility. Then the Egyptians shall hear it, for you brought up this people in your might from among them. And they'll tell it to the inhabitants of this land, for they have heard that you are Lord among this people, that you, Lord, art seen face to face, and that your cloud stands over them, and that you go before them by daytime in a pillar of cloud and in a pillar of fire by night. Now, if you kill this people as one man, then the nations which have heard the fame of you will speak, saying, because the Lord was not able to bring this people into the land which he swore to them, therefore he has slain them in the wilderness. You see, God's credibility was on the line. The people were going to think, well, God is not so almighty. He couldn't bring these people into the land that he promised them. So Moses said, and now I beseech you, let the power of my Lord be great, according as what you have spoken, saying, the Lord is long-suffering. You see, Moses is telling the Lord the thing that the Lord told him. He's going right back and he's repeating to the Lord what the Lord said. You know, the Lord likes it when we do this. He knows we've been paying attention if we do this. What did he say to Moses before? He said, I am long-suffering, of great mercy, forgiving iniquity and transgression, and by no means clearing the guilty, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children to the third and fourth generation. That's what he told Moses before. Well, that's what Moses is now repeating back to the Lord. And so Moses says, pardon these people, pardon the iniquity of this people according to the greatness of your mercy, and as that you have forgiven this people from Egypt even until now. And the Lord answered, and he said, I have pardoned according to your word. But as truly as I live, all the earth shall be filled with the glory of the Lord, because all these men which have seen my glory and my miracles which I did in Egypt and in the wilderness, and have tempted me now these 10 times, and have not hearkened to my voice, surely they shall not see the land which I swore to their fathers, neither shall any of them that provoked me see it, but my servant Caleb, and then later on he says also Joshua, because he had another spirit with him. You see, I'm telling you, it's all about, now I said the word attitude, but here we have another spirit, and the spirit has to do with where is your heart. If your heart is toward God, then you have God's spirit. If your heart is not towards God, then you don't have his spirit. You have the enemy's spirit, and you have that attitude. Well, God turned the children of Israel back to the Red Sea. Now, do you know what that means, that he turned them back to the Red Sea? It means he literally took them back to the place of their deliverance and plunked them there. Now, what is the significance of that? Well, if we never move from the place of our deliverance, we will never grow beyond where we are right now. You see, God does not want spiritual babies. He doesn't want us to stick back there at the Red Sea, or back there in 1963 at the altar, where you know, we're still back there and we're still having all this baby stuff about us spiritually. He doesn't want that. He wants us to move forward with him, not to hang on to our past. He wants us to move forward to the promised land. After the Lord made his pronouncement, the children of Israel tried to undo it. Now, let me tell you that once God pronounces something, it cannot be undone. In fact, that is another part of this teaching in Shalak Lakah, because God is taking them in to Canaan. He's going to give them Canaan. And people have often thought, well, why would he go and give them land where there's other people? Couldn't God just, you know, pick another piece of land? Well, maybe he could have. But you see, in the land that God promised Abraham, there was somebody there. And it was Canaan. It was the descendants of Canaan. And God, in Genesis chapter 9, verses 25 and 26, cursed Canaan. He cursed him. So one of the things that's going on here, besides that God has promised this land to the descendants of Abraham, is that God is bringing the curse that he gave to Ham about Ham's son Canaan. Let's read it. Cursed be Canaan, a servant of servants shall he be to his brothers. He also said, blessed be the Lord, the God of Shem, let Canaan be his servant. Now let's look at this. These folks trying to get into the promised land, what are they? They're Shemites. They are, you know, that's where we get our word anti-Semitism. Well, Semitism is, you know, the opposite of anti-Semitism, but the root of that word is Shem. And Canaan is cursed to be the servant of Shem. So God is going to fulfill two promises here. One is the curse of Canaan, and the other is the promise that he made to Abraham. So I'm telling you, when God says that something is going to be some way, it's going to be that way. When God makes a pronouncement, it cannot be undone. Now, God is extremely patient. He's been particularly patient with yours truly. But eventually there comes a point when he has shown the person that the person is unwilling. You know, he's shown that person's unwillingness to come on board with his plan. And at that point, once God has given that person enough time to show that they are just unwilling and they're not going to change, God has to cut bait and move on. Now, there's a saying, and I use it a lot, that you can't push a rope. God doesn't push ropes. We either go with him, or he moves on to the next generation and leaves us behind. Now, listen. If we want to overcome through the tribulation, we have to first be prepared spiritually and mentally. We have to have a free man's mindset, not a slave's mindset. You know, Mike Clayton teaches survival, but he puts spiritual mindset and mental mindset way above all the physical stuff that we can do to prepare. Because it's what we have in our heart and what we have in our mind that will make the difference whether we survive and overcome or whether we succumb to the tricks of the enemy and make the mistakes that our ancestors make. So in order to change this, to begin to transition from where we've been to where we are going, we have to do some things. First, we have to begin to equate obedience to Torah with freedom. And we have to choose the better side of our natures and shun the worse side. And we have to choose to trust God instead of cry and complain about doing the things that he wants us to do. I'm having to learn that lesson right now. That's how we'll make it. Let's not follow in the path of our ancestors. Let's make other, better choices. And let's start practicing that right now. Let's keep our noses stuck in the Torah, stuck in the New Testament, which is commentary on the Torah, and stuck in the writings and the prophets. Let's learn from what is in there, not only from the commandments and the instruction, but let's go back and read what the people did that was, you know, ended up, good. Let's do that. And, you know, if that situation ended up bad, well, let's not do that. You know, let's go back and keep our nose in our Bibles and just keep learning and keep growing spiritually, because that is what's going to make us overcomers going through the Great Tribulation. Shabbat Shalom.